Yeah, Malav of Blue Stockings told me that as architects you work with space, and he said it would be easy for you to comprehend where I'm coming from because I work with time. And I think that we need to see whether we can join these this evening. America fiercely denies history. It lives in an illusion of eternal life, where if death threatens, shopping is advised, in the famous response to the destruction of the Twin Towers. The consumption of the commodity is the foundation of this illusion of eternity. But for that illusion to be effective, time must be abolished. There must be no history, or it must be silly myths. Yeah, okay. I think this is a distinction in contrast with what the American warrior Rumsfeld called old Europe. Certainly it's a contrast with the people in motion in Mexico or Bolivia or Nigeria or Kenya or India, for whom the reclamation, the reclaiming of the commons, the development of the commons, is not an ideal, but is an urgent violation upon the removal of sacred lands, sacred forests, rivers of subsistence, land of ancestors. The commodity is opposed to all of this, and it comes with great violence. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. Was a big high wall there that tried to stop me. A sign was painted, said private property. But on the backside, it didn't say anything. This land was made for you and me, wrote Woody Guthrie in 1940, in February, one bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people as they stood hungry. I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This was Woody Guthrie, the homeless man who had been expropriated from common lands of indigenous people in Oklahoma. And of course, it's a song that I'm sure you all know and is beloved to you. But I would like to modify it for the purposes of our meeting tonight. The conclusion of this, after each line, is that this land was made for you and me. It's somewhat theological. It's somewhat like a Walker Evans, Ansel Adams photograph, as if there's a deity that has made this land for you and me. There's a teleology in this land. But I would like us to just change the metaphysics by changing a preposition. And I would like us to think that this land was made by you and me. And this can be our entrance into commoning. Our ancestors, our people, our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents of indigenous, of African-American, of immigrant, of European, and of Asian have preserved what they call nature, have constructed the infrastructure, drained the swamps, produced the field for agriculture with the worms, by labor from can't do in the morning to can't do at night, have produced the factories, produced the cities, and our labors have made the communities, which under neoliberalism in North America are under incessant destruction. And we cannot move too fast to halt this onslaught. So I'm just saying that this land was made by us. This is the proposition I want to put forward. And I put it forward now for a slightly polemical purpose. This issue of the commons, you will see all over in law, in the Nobel Prize, in economics, in real estate development, for gated communities will be called the commons. I want to introduce the forked tongue with this language of the commons. We must be careful. And I was very gratified, and thank you, Sabina, for your introduction. I noticed how you stumbled at a certain point in wondering what the session was called this evening. And to me, it's a grammatical problem. I think if we look at it, I might be wrong. Taking versus granting rights. I think grammatically this is called a gerund. Taking or granting rights. It doesn't tell you who takes. It doesn't, you know, the sentence, doesn't it? It has a subject and an object. But the gerund has neither. Do you follow me? And it was at that point when Sabina was trying to say who takes from whom that she stumbled for a minute and looked at her sheet, and I was very glad to hear her say, taking from the authorities have taken. Well, tonight we have to ask, who is the authority? Whence does the authority obtain its power, its legitimacy? This is the question that is being raised in the crisis of capitalism. And this is the crisis which, as architects, we must work and negotiate a solution to. This issue of the gerund, who whom, who takes from whom, who grants to whom. In the one sense, they're opposite. To take, my arm is going like this. To grant, it goes like that. You see, it's an opposite movement. And I think we must take this item of grammar and apply it to every instance in our work. And in studying your walls tonight and in learning about an architecture, I see you are on this and reading your beautiful charter of the architect's duties and its ongoing discussion that you too are engaged in this. From whom do you obtain your authority to put up a wall? From whom? And this question I think is at our essence now. Eleanor Ostrom just won the... I've gone, what, 5 minutes to 10 minutes? Okay. Eleanor Ostrom just won the Nobel Prize for her very important work on the commons, on the governance of the commons. To her and many others, the commons is a common pool resource. It's like we used to call it, quote, a natural resource. But the ecology movement, if we've learned nothing, has taught us that nature is not a machine from God, but nature is a part that we have treasured, that the seeds have been preserved, as Vandana Shiva has taught us, by generations and passed from generations. Our forests are preserved this way. Our rivers are preserved this way. So this natural resource is not a God-given or free... What did the early lawyers say when they stole the land in North America? It was something about not a divine gift, but terra wildness. They called it wild because they believed it was without cultivation, without labor, and they were going to bring the labor. But of course, there was the labor of preservation. So who takes? Well, the neoliberals have taken. They have taken our land, our water, our air, and they have taken our knowledge. They've taken our wit. They've taken our libraries. I say wit because in 1381, at the time of the great peasants' revolt, it was William Langland and Pierce Plowman who referred to these are the four gifts: earth, land, water, fire, and he added wit or knowledge. Fire is energy. These, he said, was God's gifts. But these invisible commons become visible when they are taken away, and then we fight back, hence the slogan, Reclaiming the Commons. Or, getting back to the where do rights come from, so the corporations have robbed us, but didn't we give? Isn't the principle of sovereignty, of popular sovereignty, isn't it that we give to them their power of private property, of police, of authority? Doesn't that power come from us? So here, to me, perhaps the most significant part of Sabina's introduction was that to take our life in our hands. Do you see? I'm putting to us that this is not a metaphor, but we need courage for this, and we don't have the courage alone. We only have the courage together to take our life in our hands. I think this was in one of the messages I received. So, you know, I was thinking about, all right, have I made some points? Yeah, okay, good. Good. In my mind, most directly, was within that charter of the architects, was the consultations with the community. Was a people's architects, architecture. And here, you know, I wanted, my interest has been in law. My interest has been in the foundation of community. I know for many people, our respect for law comes from our simplistic notion of law, which is to do unto others as we would be done unto. For many, that's, you know, in the naivete that we have when we are taught. The essence of law is mutuality. The essence of law is responsibility to our neighbors, to our loved ones. the city emerged as separate from the law of Caesar, separate from the law of the monarch, separate from the law of the church or the pope. That law, that city, at its birth in European history, was a commune, was the site of traders, the site of merchants, who held personal responsibility, getting back to that fantastic conversation that the Bristol Radical History Group brought to the Blue Stockings last night as they unveiled for us the mystique and the criminality of the corporation, whose origin was the city, the hospital, the monastery, and the school, nonprofits for human reproduction and service. How did the corporation turn on its head and become a avaricious, grasping, anonymous, irresponsible entity? Was the subject of that lecture. This commune of the city, as we take back the city, as we take back the land, was made by us. It's separate, again, from king and church, or from monotheist of spirit and flesh, of warrior and priest. The city was separate. So I wanted to remind us of that. In our work as architects, we need to reclaim that history. In Magna Carta, the foundation of American law, one of the foundations of American law, and its Charter of the Forest, is based on the recognition of the practice of commoning. I choose my words carefully. The king or the archbishop did not grant a commons. They were forced to recognize a commons. Do you see the difference? We make the commons. Then they can recognize it or not. But it is ours. And our government and our self-government arises from us, not from them. So this was this element of time. The Nobel Prize winner, Eleanor Ostrom, we must help her with that. I'm reluctant to criticize her because the commons and women have been inseparable in Africa today, in Chiapas, in Venezuela, the actual commons of our neighborhood, of our street, of our allotment, of our farm, is preserved by those who reproduce the community, who preserve the seeds, who look after the children. So when the Nobel Prize on the commons is given to a woman, there is a great and deep historical justice to this. And that the economics profession rises in revolt, did you read it? The Krugmans of the world, the Larry Summers of the world, and said they'd never heard of her. Again, it's shame. But I think it's not just shame. We must say, what do they think economics is? It's a household production. And how we run our household, how we share tasks in the kitchen, how we allot the dishes, the soups. This is something we can work out among ourselves, isn't it? Thank you very much. It smells wonderful. I can't wait. I'm salivating. One more point. Thank you very much. I see I've gone on a bit too much. The other point in chapter 47, or chapter 6 of Magna Carta, is who is going to resolve differences? How will this be done? There is no commons without community. In those chapters, it's the jury, the only part of the state that is both random and common. The state that we know, the real state today. This gives us some practice in how we might become. And all over the world, to see the elder, to see the panchayat in India, to see the group under the tree. Here, the elders, those whose memory is deepest and longest, will settle disputes of the commons. Or is it essential to commoning? It's direct democracy. This history is ours. And we must, in reclaiming the commons, the way to avoid the forked tongue is to reclaim the history as well. So there's much else I'd like to say, but I would actually prefer to listen now to those who with practical knowledge. Yeah.